On another day, Sunday, which was a naturally favorite day for visitors, this time in April of 1883, Sri Ramakrishna had gone into deep samadhi when his nephew Ramlal had sung for him a song of the gopis of Vrindavan, celebrating their beloved Krishna. Tears of joy flowed from the eyes of the master's motionless face and fell upon the folded hands. After a long time, when his mind came down, he began to mumble something, words which were scarcely audible to his visitors. Something like this: "Thou art I, and I am thou. Thou eatest, I eat. What is this confusion thou hast created?" Aloud he said, "I see everything like a man with jaundiced eyes. I see thee alone everywhere. O Krishna, friend of the lowly, O eternal consort of my soul, O Govinda." At these words he again went into samadhi, plunging the room into silence. We have seen that when Sri Ramakrishna was warned by Narendra that his head might be turned by thinking of him too much, the master had gone to the Divine Mother and returned with a devastating reply. There was one Pratap Hazra living at that time in the temple compound, a kind of hanger-on who bulged with half-digested spiritual ideas and practices. He too used to taunt Ramakrishna with this thought, that in dwelling on the youngsters he might forget God. One day, while riding to Balaram's house in a carriage, the master became much worried and agitated about it. Immediately, the Divine Mother revealed to him in a flash that it is she herself who has become man. But, she reminded him, she manifests herself most clearly through pure souls, such as these youngsters were. At this, he went into samadhi. Afterwards, feeling angry with Hazra for the misery he had experienced, he thought to himself, "Why should I blame the poor man? How is he to know?" He said in many ways, on many occasions, that it is God himself who has become this universe with all its beings, animate and inanimate. And as we shall see, it became month by month a more and more patent fact to him, his ordinary consciousness, that it is in man that the mother is displaying her most splendid sport. This is particularly well illustrated by his visions of consciousness. Some of these have already been told, such as the vision on the meadow near Burdwan, where he found everything, even the ants, filled with consciousness, and the day when he injured the bark of a tree and found the tree full of consciousness. And, of course, the reader will remember the master's early vision of Divine Mother, in which he was overcome by an ocean of consciousness. There were many others. One day, under the banyan tree, he had a vision of non-dual, indivisible consciousness, and of this substance he saw that innumerable men, animals, and other creatures had been made, and among them aristocrats, the English, the Muslims, himself, scavengers and dogs. An odd assortment indeed. Then he saw one Muslim with a long beard who came to him with rice on an earthen plate. After feeding some other Muslims, he gave Sri Ramakrishna a few grains too. It is interesting that in vision the master would take food which had first been offered to others, and non-Hindus at that, a thing he almost never did in the sense plane. He said that the Divine Mother was here showing him that there exists only one and not two, that it is Satchidananda alone that has become the world and its living beings and food as well. In a similar vein, he once saw rice, vegetables, and other foods, filth and dirt lying around him. Suddenly, the soul came out of his body and, like a flame, touched everything. I'm using his words. It was like a protruding tongue of fire and tasted everything once, even the excreta. It was revealed to me, said the Master, that all these are one substance, the non-dual and indivisible consciousness. He once told the book-learned Mahima Chakravarti, it has been revealed to me that there exists an ocean of consciousness without limit. From it come all things of the relative plane, and in it they merge again. Millions of Brahmandas, literally eggs of Brahma, the Creator, rise in that Chidakasha and merge in it again. All this has been revealed to me. I don't know much about what your books say. Some see in this a reference to the appearance and disappearance of the distant galaxies of astronomical observation. There were other revelations. To the usual explanation of Aum, he added the sound of a gong, Tom, and said it was the merging of the lila in the nitya, the gross, the subtle, and the causal merging in the great cause. Waking, dreaming, and deep sleep merging into Riya. The striking of the gong, he said, is like the falling of a heavy weight into a big ocean. Waves begin to rise, the relative rises from the absolute. The causal, subtle, and gross bodies appear out of the great cause. From Turiya emerge the states of deep sleep, dream, and waking. These waves, arising from the great ocean, merge again into it, from the absolute to the relative, and vice versa. I have clearly perceived all these things, said he. And that day he told the devotees about his visit to the venerable Devendranath Tagore. Their relationship had been amusing, but also profitable. When asked to say something about God, Tagore had said, this universe is like a chandelier, and each living being is a light in it. Sri Ramakrishna confides to the devotees, once meditating in the Panchavati, I too had a vision like that. I found his words agreed with my vision, and I thought he must be a very great man. Some of the Master's depictions of how God is seen as consciousness are very graphic. The universe is conscious, he told him, on account of the consciousness of God. Sometimes I find that this consciousness wriggles about, as it were, even in small fish. Sometimes I find that the universe is saturated with it, as the earth is soaked with water in the rainy season. One day I was about to gather some flowers. They were everywhere on the trees. At once I had a vision of Virat. This vision has been described in Chapter 4, where the listener may refer back to it. It appeared that his worship was just over. The flowers looked like a bouquet placed on the head of the deity. I could not pick them. God sports through man as well. I see man as the embodiment of Narayana, God. And some of his observations are downright earthy. Quote, I have seen with my own eyes that God dwells even in the sexual organ. I saw him once in the sexual intercourse of two dogs. Another day he said that the Divine Mother had showed him Shiva and Shakti in communion. Everywhere I saw the communion of Shiva and Shakti in all living things, men, animals, trees, plants. I saw them in the communion of all male and female elements. Another day I was shown a heap of heads, mountain high. Nothing else existed, and I was seated alone in their midst. In other words, to Sri Ramakrishna in his maturity, there was no place where God was not. Once, while coming from the pine grove to the Panchavati, he was followed by a dog, dogs being regarded by the Hindus as most unclean. He stood still for a while. The thought had come to his mind that the Divine Mother might say something to him through that dog. During his tantric sadhana, he sometimes rode on a dog and fed it, taking part of the food himself. In this way, he said, he realized that the whole world was filled with God alone. To resume our narrative, the Master, on November 28, 1883, paid a final visit to Keshab Sen at the Lily Cottage in Calcutta, where the latter was living out his last days under a racking illness. This scene and its dialogue form one of the most intense and memorable chapters of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. The Master was in a highly ecstatic and abstracted mood, and no sooner had he seated himself on the stuffed couch in the aristocratically appointed drawing room than he lost external consciousness and spoke to someone unseen. Hello, Mother. I see that you too have come. How you are showing off in your Banaras sari. Don't bother me now, please. Sit down and be quiet. A madman indeed. Who but Mother's own child could talk to her like that? A Banaras sari is one of the most finest of the clothes of Indian ladies. Possibly his symbol-loving mind was making an oblique reference to the sumptuous finery of the drawing room. A couple of weeks later, he said to M that he had a vision while listening to the kirtan of Rakhal in the midst of Sri Ramakrishna's companions in Vrindavan. This appears to be an additional vision to those already recorded about Rakhal, and we can presume that the kirtan to which he refers was sung shortly before he makes mention of it. Within a year, Rakhal went off to Vrindavan for a visit and lived there for some days. Late in January of 1884, there occurred an event in Sri Ramakrishna's life which caused him great pain, physically, and also set him to speculating about its cause and his own spiritual condition. He had been walking toward the pine grove alone, overwhelmed suddenly with ecstasy. He went from the path up to the railing which overlooked the Ganges bulkhead, and there he fell down, dislocating a bone in his left arm. Splints and bandage were required, and it entailed considerable pain for him. When he was not lost in samadhi, or otherwise oblivious of the body. Details about what the master was seeing at the time of the accident are scarce indeed. Evidently, he saw Sri Krishna as his beloved, standing near the railing. Later he confided to M, "I want to tell you something very secret. Why do I love boys like Purna and Narendra so much? Once in a spiritual mood, I felt intense love for Jagannath, Sri Krishna. Love such as a woman feels for her sweetheart. In that mood, I was about to embrace him when I broke my arm. It was then revealed to me, quote, you have assumed this human body, therefore establish with human beings the relationship of friend, father, mother, or son. Shortly after this injury, he said petulantly to the Divine Mother, Mother, it hurts me very much. She then gave him the vision of a carriage and its driver. Here and there, a few of the carriage's screws were loose. It moved as the driver directed it. It had no power of its own. The above admonition about his spiritual relationships is not the only lesson Sri Ramakrishna felt he had learned from the accident. We shall want to look at some of his other observations about it. At the end of February, he said to M, since my arm was injured, a deep change has come over me. I now delight only in the Naralila, the human manifestation of God. Nitya and Lila. The Nitya is the indivisible Satchidananda, and the Lila, or sport, takes various forms. For example, the Lila as God, the Lila as the deities, as man, and as the universe. End of quote. In March, he told the devotees again that his nature was changing on account of the arm injury. Quote, it is being revealed to me that there is a greater manifestation of God in man than in other created beings. God is telling me, as it were, I dwell in men, be merry with men. Among men, God manifests himself in a still greater degree in a pure-souled devotee. That is why I feel great longing for Narendra, Rakhal, and other such youngsters. And again the following month, I find a change coming over me. Years ago, Vaishnav Charan, one of the pundit Salakas with whom he had a warm relationship, said to me, one attains perfect knowledge when one sees God in man. I wouldn't admit it then. Now I see that it is God alone who is moving about in various forms as a holy man, as a cheat, as a villain. A month later, in May, he made similar remarks and in a mood of confidence told Adhar, M, and others that nowadays he was not seeing the spirit form of God. that although it was his nature to see God's form, to touch and embrace him, God was revealing himself now through man. But we must not take these statements too literally. Sri Ramakrishna had long ago seen God in man, had many times discovered the presence of the Divine Mother in everything in the universe. This experience was not something just born in the 48th year of his life, nor does it mean that vision and bhava samadhi were over. Many visions were yet to come, right up to the last day of his life. The Master often taught that once a devotee, always a devotee, and this rule, at least, applied to him as well. The form of the mother was not about to leave this child. Nor does it mean that he was no longer inclined to plunge into the absolute, the nitya, as he liked to call it, or the akanda satchidananda. The impulsion to the nirvikalpa plane, too, was with him always. And as readers of his life know, this tendency was even more prevalent toward the end. Sri Ramakrishna gave another explanation of the injury to his arm some months after the event. "Please tell me one thing," he said to M. "What is the significance of my having hurt my arm? Once my teeth were broken while I was in a state of ecstasy. It is the arm this time." M remained silent, as he often did on such occasions, waiting for the Master to speak again. The answer was provided. Quote, "My arm was broken in order to destroy my ego to its very root. Now I cannot find my ego within myself anymore. When I search for it, I see God alone. Yet, so long as life remained, and when the arm had healed, those features of his makeup, which he used to call ego, still manifested themselves to others and kept him in the human framework. But even this was none of his own doing, as the following conversation of August of that year clearly shows. The Master had been talking about what it means to be sahaja, simple. As if to illustrate it perfectly, he asks M, "Have I any ego?" M, "Yes, sir, a little. You have kept it to preserve your body and to enjoy divine love in the company of the devotees and to impart spiritual knowledge to them. Further, you have kept this trace of ego by praying to the Divine Mother for it." "No," Sri Ramakrishna at once corrects him. "I have not kept it. It is God Himself who has left it in me. It is God who does all these things. I do not know anything." So we see that in the Master's last years, three kinds of changes are spoken of and are manifested. The increasing prevalence of samadhis of the nirvikalpa type, his tendency to see the divine more in the human plane than in the visionary, more in the gross than in the subtle, and the attenuation of his ego. Are these three separate processes concurrent but unrelated? Or are they aspects of the same general trend? Is there any unifying principle under which we can more easily understand what was taking place? A clue may perhaps be found in another of Sri Ramakrishna's favorite teachings. He was fond of calling himself a vijnani, That is to say, a bhakta is one who worships a personal god, usually with form. A jnani seeks the knowledge of truth, formless and impersonal, and often considers himself the more advanced aspirant. But he, the master used to say, was a vijnani, one who has gone beyond ignorance and knowledge, even the experiential knowledge that God exists, to an intimate acquaintance with him. It was like the difference between seeing milk and actually drinking and assimilating milk. He told his devotees that his final and most mature opinion was that a man should reach the absolute by following the trail of the relative, like reaching the roof by the stairs. After realizing the absolute, he should climb down to the relative, and realizing that the stairs are made of the same material as the roof, should live on that plane in the company of devotees, charging his mind with the love of God. He further said that for a man in this condition, whatever ego remains is a ripe ego, an ego of knowledge or devotion, but not of ignorance. Does Sri Ramakrishna fit his own illustration? Can one say that these tendencies of the Master's latter days exemplify a kind of descent down the stairs to an increasing awareness of the all-pervading Brahman? Our conclusion is that the attempts of language and illustration to sort and classify are baffled in the case of so complex a mind and nature as Sri Ramakrishna's. That if on the one hand his mind seemed to be soaring toward the formless, it was also, in another sense, drawn increasingly to the world of forms. If his ego, by which we recognize his endearing human traits, seemed to be with him to the end, it was also, by his own testimony, being obliterated, or ripened, if we like. M. once gave expression to this idea in a beautiful way. He told Ramakrishna, "God made other men by machine, as it were, but you he has made with his own hands." The master laughed.